Welcome to the Heart of Show Business. I am your host, Alexia Melocchi. I believe in great storytelling and that every successful artist has a deep desire to express something from the heart to create a ripple effect in our society. Emotion and entertainment are closely tied together. My guests and I want to give you insider access to how the film, television, and music industry works. We will cover dreams come true, the road less traveled, journey beginnings, and a lot of insight and inspiration in between. I am a successful film and television entrepreneur who came to America as a teenager to pursue my show business dreams. Are you ready for some unfiltered real talk with entertainment visionaries from all over the world? Then let's roll sound and action. Well, hello, hello to all my listeners in the heart of show business. On this beautiful Friday in California, as I talk to you in real time, connected with Canada.
Way up north.
Yes, Canada, with my beautiful dear friend, David Winning, who is an incredibly accomplished feature and TV director. If I'm just going to tell you some things, you're going to lose your mind. I mean, 43 features, 29 series, 180 TV credits among them.
Alexia, this just means that I'm old. That's what this means. So.
No. It means that you're like a fast director, which I can't wait to ask you about, because this is a guy who knows how to direct and he knows how to do it on budget and on schedule. But look at all his credits. I mean, Stargate Atlantis, Van Helsing, a bunch of Christmas movies from Hallmark, rom-coms, Lifetime, the studios. And what's really interesting is that he shot his first feature at the age of 22 on a budget of $50,000 only. Talk about passion and drive. Welcome to my show, David.
Thanks, Alexia. It's great to see you. We've been catching up before you started. I put my first feature together when I was early 20s. I was 22 and I had raised all this money. I was going to go to film school. And I had this brainstorm in the early 80s that, no, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take all this money. I'm going to make my first feature. So being naive is definitely a plus when you're younger, because, you know, tackling something that huge is just insane. But so I went ahead and I made my first film in my 20s. It took me 4 years to finish, but it kind of launched everything else for me, as you know. So it's been a long ride.
And of course, you know, for the listeners, when you're talking about a movie in your 20s, we're not going to give away your age, I promise. But obviously, you shot this on film. It's not like you had, you know, digital world where, you know, you had to edit, you had to deal with film and cutting and editing and post-production and all of that, which is a lot harder.
Yeah, it is. I always think kids nowadays must have it so much easier because they've got, you know, broadcast quality digital basically in their hands. Yeah. With all the digital equipment and stuff now. But no, I kind of miss the days of shooting film. I don't think I've shot film in 15 years. And I remember the days when you'd sit on set and you could listen to the film rolling through the cameras. It's kind of nostalgic. And that's how you know how old you are, when you can remember movies. But
when you're meeting with your editor and you're seeing the actual film that is being physically cut and snipped, and you're going, oh my God, you know, and then what happens? It ends up on the cutting room floor. There is no such thing anymore. Where does it end? It ends in the delete folder on your computer.
Exactly. It's like cyberspace where we are now. That's where everything ends up.
It's so incredible. How do you feel though? As I'm interested, because like you said, every kid today can become a director. They technically don't even have to go to directing school because they got, you know, 4K iPhone Pro. They can do anything. They can do their mics, their lighting. They can do everything.
Yeah, all they have to do is come up with good stories. That's the only stressor. Is you got to come up with some interesting stories. But I don't know. I think it's exciting that anybody can get their hands on equipment now and make movies, because everybody's got stories to tell. You know, and I always think, look, the cream rises to the top, you know, so anybody can get an opportunity to try and make movies. It's always that first one that's hard, though, because I remember I always thought when I was, the movie's called Storm. Anybody wants to look it up, it's all over the place. It's a little low budget movie that we shot for very little money in 1983. It took 4 years to finish. And it was kind of a labor of love. You know, it was, we kind of willed it into existence. And then and my viewpoint was, if it isn't successful, you know, whatever, at least I had my shot, and I'll go back and work in a bookstore or something. That'll be my life. But it was successful, and we kind of rolled along. And as they say, one thing led to another. It's always tricky when you think, did you plan your career? I never planned anything. You know, one thing leads to another. And how I ended up getting where I am now is beyond me. But everybody takes a different roadmap, I guess.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting because, again, going back to how much work you have done through the years, I mean, there's sometimes directors who are incredibly talented and they sit for 10 years and no mm-hmm. job comes their way. But you are a master networker. And this is what I love about you, beyond the fact that you're super talented and you know how to shoot fast and all of that. You are like me. You believe in the value of relationships, and you never shy away from saying, you just said that to me before we started recording, hey, let's do a movie together. I'm ready. You're doing this. Like, I'm available. And I love that about you. I think people need to understand that it is about relationships. I mean, ultimately, you know, you have to know how to run a set when you're there, but sure. To get there, you have to work your relationships. So what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's wanting to get hired and just doesn't know where to go?
Well, it's extra tricky for me because, as you mentioned, I'm Canadian, and Canadians are unbearably polite. So, you know, we'll knock on the door and it'll get slammed and we'll go, okay, that's it. I'm not going to try again. Whereas I tried to kind of always have kind of an international vibe to when I was trying to get films going, and I'd never wanted to take no for an answer. So, you know, we push and push and push. But I don't know. I always tell young filmmakers or old filmmakers or anybody who wants to make movies that one of the best ways, I think, is to try, and you and I have talked about this, but to try to shoot like a trailer for a film that doesn't exist. You know, create a little 2-minute advertisement of something with your friends, or get out and just try to take the best. If you've got a script, you know, you take one of the best scenes in the script and try to shoot a little 2-minute version of it. And people look at it and they say, this is great. I want to see the movie. Well, it doesn't exist yet. But if you open your checkbook and if we can raise some money, you know, this is kind of what I'd like to make. So, and then, of course, you also have the added benefit of having a little like a director's reel that you've created, which is kind of selling your ability. So I think that's what I would do now. I was kind of stupid. I just went and made the movie when I was 22. But I think nowadays, if I was trying to get something going, I'd try to start a little smaller, or maybe not. Who knows? Who knows what you do nowadays? It's all different circumstances. But that's one of the tricks I've always tried to press on students and people, is just, you know, try to get something, try to get an example of what you'd like to see happening. And then hopefully you can get enough people inspired to help you raise some cash to actually get it happening.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. You know, the mood reels, the trailers, all of those are so important to really have your own voice as a filmmaker. You really need to show stylistically how you're going to film something. Now, tell me though, because you work on TV a lot, and we've discussed the TV schedules are really quick. Like, I think you told, was it you who told me that you did, I think, a Lifetime movie like in 11 days or 12 days? You did like a film in such a short time. No, not that it's something to be proud of.
You don't always want to advertise that, because then producers go, gee, could we do it in 10 days? It does. I mean, it saves money. I've done a lot of these Hallmark movies, Christmas movies, and very, very seasonal movies the last few years. And the one that holds the record, we shot a movie called The Tree That Saved Christmas in 2014 with Lacey Chabert. It was one of her first. She's done a whole bunch of movies in Canada now, but it was one of her first films. And we shot it in 11 days, which just seems unbelievably crazy now. And, you know, through a long series of successful little accidents, it ended up being on the New York Times top 5 best Christmas movies of 2014 list, which was a great thrill for us. Cause then it's like, don't tell anybody how long it took to make. Cause it's probably one of the shortest schedules I've ever had, but it was back in the days when the MOWs were just starting in Canada with Lifetime and Hallmark. And this particular one was Up TV, which was doing a lot of films then. And yeah, so it got made, but, it's kind of tricky. I mean, most of these films are shot on 15-day schedules now. In the old days, as you know, it was 25 or 30 days or 40 days. And those kind of days are so long gone for me. It's like a luxury. I'd love to have the time to, you know, really just nurture a film and take some time to make the scenes really special. But I think working in television for decades, as I've done, has certainly given me some skills about just how to definitely keep your eye on the clock. You don't want to make junk. You want to make a good movie, but you also realize that you know, if you don't get this done in 12 hours, especially in television, it's a factory. So if you don't get it done in 12 hours, there'll be somebody else directing tomorrow and you'll be gone. You know, so it's kind of my livelihood. I have to figure out how to negotiate the clock and how to work a crew and keep everybody happy, which has always been one of my main things. I like to run very calm, fun sets, and because I've always believed that you get the best out of people when you make them relaxed and happy, which is why I like the title of your podcast, because to me, the whole film business is about the heart of things. You know, I've done all sorts of things. I've done Christmas movies and monster movies and a ton of sci-fi. And to me, it's always about the story and the heart of the story. And, you know, anything can be entertainment. So
I absolutely agree with you, David. And it's so interesting because in Europe, still today, there's so many filmmakers that they get stuck. I see sometimes their shooting schedules and they're like, oh, this is going to be 7-8 weeks. And it's a drama. And you're going, why do you need 7-8 weeks? And then I always say that, but I have to have all the beautiful shots. And I said to them, it's not about getting the perfect shot. It's about telling a good story. And this is the most important thing. And some of them go, well, let me try this again. And let me do like 5 takes or 20 takes in a scene. And clearly, you don't have the luxury to do that. And yet, you turn around movies that are great stories that you get to direct and tend to be at the top of the charts on the streaming platform. So that says it all, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been lucky. And I think, as I said, you know, TV schedules really taught me a lot. I was doing a lot of in the 80s and 90s. I started up, my very first TV job was I was doing the syndicated horror show, actually, called Friday the 13th, based on the movies. Frank Mancuso and the folks at Paramount were creating this little syndicated series in Toronto, and that was my first job. And that was kind of where I first learned how to, you know, pedal to the metal, how to definitely make sure that things are efficiently run on a set. So it was great when I went back to the movies. I took all the television experience with me, which I loved.
So let me ask you a question. You just said previously about being on a happy set or being in a relaxed set. What makes a happy set to you? What would be the magic formula that would make a happy set to begin with?
Well, you end up being kind of like a party host, you know. Honestly, it's like you're half psychologist, part party host, and then a little bit filmmaker. And I always like to have sets that are a ton of fun. People have, because I always kind of challenge people. They come on and, you know, you're going to have a ton of fun on this movie. And by the end of it, they say, you know, you're right. I really did have a good time. I've got a little bit of a reputation of trying to keep things very light and fun and stuff. Because, I mean, my first love is really comedy, and how I ended up doing horror movies and sci-fi and heavy drama is fun to me. But I have a great respect for comedy. So we like to have a lot of laughs when we're making a movie, even when it's, you know, some monster movie or zombie show. We tend to have a lot of fun making them, because I think I just think people give you the best work when they're relaxed and when they feel like there's no judgment and they're free. I mean, you've got the clock ticking all the time, obviously, so you've got that pressure, but I just think people do their best work, and why not create an environment where people do their best work? Because it just makes me look good, obviously. You know, I'm trying to get the best performances out of people, and that's just how I loved working. The other thing that kind of started it for me is when I was a kid and I was working on film sets, I used to get screamed at a lot. You know, I was the PA who was late with the coffee and stuff. And I will never mention the names, but I had a lot of people treat me not great. And I remember muttering to myself, you know, if I ever get this job, I'm going to treat people better. And I got the chance to do it. So I just always try to create a great environment so people can feel like they're in a little lab and they can just experiment and have fun. You know, and we always do extra takes. We do the work, but then we try to, especially on comedy shows or lighter shows, we always do an extra take on any scene where it's just kind of, here, you do one for you. You know, I love to do improv stuff too. And it just creates a much freer environment for creating anything. And I love that.
Well, no wonder you got all the actors who love you. I mean, you've consistently gotten great actors in all your shows, you know, even on the smaller budget sort of TV movies, you've always got experienced name actors in that space. And I think that's no wonder. Many times I'm sure they respond to the script, but they also respond to knowing that it is you behind the camera directing them.
Yeah, well, it's just, I mean, I don't know. I think life's too short. And I always think, you know, it's just a movie. It's just a TV show.
Exactly. So
let's have fun. Let's have fun making it. Let's entertain people. And you always hope that, you know, when you're dead and gone, some of these things will live on and some people will be entertained when you're not walking around on the planet anymore, you know? So I've always, and who knows what's going to happen, because it's a large body of work. And these Christmas movies, I think, are probably going to outlive me. because they tend to have a life of their own, which is great.
For sure. But I have to ask you, though, have you adopted a cat yet? Because you've done the kitten movies. I'm like, I want to see some cats in the background. What's going on, David? You've done dogs. You've done cats. What's going on?
Kind of a sad story. I lost my favorite cat, and you've probably been through this about 20 years ago now, and I just have never been had the heart to want to get that in love with an animal again. So I kind of live vicariously through my work, and I had a 20-pound blue Persian back in the 90s who was like my best buddy. He was the stupidest cat in the world, but just full of love, and he was, you know, literally his name was Blue, and he was literally like blue fur, and I used to carry him around my coat, and he was just my best buddy, and that just broke my heart when he got sick. Like, it's just hard with them. You love animals, but it's just hard to let them go. And you know, the reason you bring that up obviously is because one of the most recent things I did was The Nine Kittens of Christmas, which is a film for Hallmark Channel, and they say never work with kids and animals, and I had both of them all over the place. And I thought to myself, how could this not go wrong? I mean, it's the movie opens with a fireman opening a cardboard box full of kittens that basically explode like popcorn. And I thought, who's not going to like this movie? So
It makes me happy just to hear about that. I have to tell you, David, and it's true. I know what you said about losing an animal. I don't know if you saw on social media, you probably even haven't had the chance, but I did lose my cat in January, my 5-year-old. Wonderful. And it was, you know, vet's mistake. I know it was just like the worst thing forever. And I said never again. And then 10 days later, here I am rescuing another black cat who came from a hoarding. And I have to say, I haven't regretted a moment that I've done that. But I do know it's a bond that, yeah, it never goes away. That's why we need to make more puppy and kitty movies.
I know. And the good thing about Nine Kittens, I don't know how many folks saw it. It was on Hallmark and over Christmas. All of the 9 kittens in the movie, they were, I think, 10 weeks old when we made the movie. Every single last one of them was adopted by various crew members and stuff. So they're all in happy families now, and they're probably all giant cats. But we had fun with them when they were kittens.
Well, you saw now at the Oscars, I posted that on Facebook too. I said it's probably like the happiest, really the best award goes to that little doggy, Mac and Cheese, when they did the memoriam to Betty White and they brought in this rescue dog that. And he got adopted right away. I'm going, you know what? Why don't we post more of that instead of all the drama? You know?
We need more good news. Yeah. I can't remember who adopted that little puppy. It was somebody famous.
It was a little boy. It was like, I think it was a picture of John Travolta, but obviously he went there, but it was like a young boy who took the little, I was like, oh, this is so beautiful. But, you know, going back to directing and to your personal career and journey, who's your mentor? Do you have a mentor or somebody that you go, it's because of him that I'm directing?
Well, I mean, you know, I always say, sounds corny, but my mentors have always been my parents. My parents were wonderful folks. You probably heard, I lost my mom last year. She lived to be 98, and my dad has been gone a long, long time, but my parents were wonderful, and they didn't come from any kind of, they did come from a little bit of an artistic background, but they were mainly, you know, my dad was like a PhD in chemical engineering, and it was a very academic family. And I came along with my little Super 8 camera when I was a kid, and I said, I want to make movies. And my dad just wrapped his arms around me and he said, okay, let's do it. And it was wonderful. And I got this kind of amazing support from people you think would try to steer you into, no, you'd be a doctor or, you know, be a lawyer or a dentist or something. But they were totally supportive of my career. So my parents definitely are my first mentors and my heroes. I think in terms of directors, I've always liked two ends of the spectrum. I'm a huge Stanley Kubrick fan, always have been. And then on the completely other end of the spectrum, my friends know I'm a huge John Carpenter fan. He was like the master of the B movie. I think those are the people that really inspired me. Probably John Carpenter, because when I was 17, Halloween came out in the late 70s. And it was, you know, the $300,000 movie that ended up making $50 million. And it was like the number one selling, the highest grossing independent film up until, I think, Blair Witch Project kind of knocked it off the perch. But those kind of things are very sort of motivating for me making movies. And I just love the visual style that they had. I think Kubrick's a genius. I mean, I'm a fan of, I mean, he didn't get to make many movies, but I think they're all brilliant artwork. And so those kind of things always inspired me.
Yet though, David, you've done a lot of rom-coms and Christmas movies, and that's not a John Carpenter style of filmmaking.
No, I had a very schizophrenic existence the last few years because I was doing romantic comedies for Hallmark Channel, and at the same time, I was also shooting a very violent vampire series on Netflix called Van Helsing, which was a ton of fun. But I mean, it's like, you know, you're lighting Christmas trees in the morning and then you're tearing throats out in the afternoon. It was a strange existence. But I mean, I like I said, anything is entertainment. I love the thriller aspect of the scary stuff that I've done. And I love the emotional challenges to make Christmas movies for Hallmark that people are surprised by, which I think is fun because, you know, the nature of Lifetime and Hallmark is that people think a lot of them are so predictable. So my challenge is to try to make them always different and interesting. And I'm always trying to get everybody in tears by the end of these movies, trying to find, you know, pulling all the emotional strings, which I think is probably the most fun part of my job is trying to figure out a way to pull people into a story and get them emotionally connected.
And clearly, David, as you know, we used to make fun of all those old Hallmark movies, but now Netflix is doing Christmas movies and Amazon is doing Christmas movies and rom-cons and teenage love and all of that. People want to feel good, I think, deep down. You know, it's just a matter of feeling good.
Especially in dark times, people kind of gravitate to this kind of material. You know, in the war years, in the 30s and early 40s, it was when the musicals were all huge. Yes. And people wanted to see that because they're just so desperate to get away from the sad news, and especially with the, you know, attention and things that are happening in the world today. I mean, people really want to have a kind of an escapist 90 minutes where they can go to an alternate universe where things are always going to end up good and people are going to fall in love, or they're about to fall in love or something. But you have the safety. I always say Hallmark movies are like safe harbor. It's like, you know, you know how it's going to end up, but so what? You want to go on that journey. So my, like I said, my challenge is to try to make them different and interesting. And, you know, there's a lot of great scripts that they're writing too. I mean, they're always trying new challenges with the Hallmark movies, which is great. And I'll never knock them because they've employed me pretty steadily for 6 or 7 years. So.
Of course. I'm going to ask a different question now, because sometimes people will say, what makes you say yes to a movie? What makes you say no to a movie or a show? Is this something that stands out that you go, oh, no, I don't care how much money they're paying me, who's in it behind it, I'm not going to do it?
Oh, this is a tricky question, Alexia, but I'll let you know a little secret. I have never turned down a job. In 36 years, I have never turned down a job, because I always think the challenge is to find anything, even if it's something you think, I don't think I'm right for that. The challenge is always to find a way to make anything entertaining. Because I've always believed that no matter what you do, and you think about it, all the films and TV shows that you've worked on, no matter what you do, the thing you're working on currently is going to be someone's favorite movie or show in the world somewhere. And that's kind of the audience that you're always directing these things for. Somebody is going to find every story, you know, unique and interesting. And they're going to say, oh, I saw that thing you did and I loved it. And I've done kind of such a variety of stuff that I've had people, you know, come up to me and say, oh, I saw this. I did a series called Afraid of the Dark for Nickelodeon about 30 years ago. And I still have people coming up saying, you know, you scared the crap out of me when I was 7. And I think, is that a good thing or a bad thing? But, you know, anything you do is going to be somebody's favorite, which I think gives you a little bit more, it gives you the responsibility to try to make everything different and original and good. And that's what I've done. But I've never turned down a job. So I don't know. I don't know what would, I mean, maybe in my twilight years, I will be offended by some material or something. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's things that I wouldn't do, but I think I've been very lucky and I've had a lot of great selection of projects and things over the years.
And I think the fact that you say yes and you're finding the best in everything, that's probably what keeps you working at the same time. Let's face it, you know, you're not going, well, you know, if I don't have this budget, if I don't have this scene, then I'm going to say no. You just say, and you and I had this conversation many times when we've been looking for stuff to do together with you as a director. I mean, we met for a reason. It's definitely not just for the podcast. So I mean, sooner or later it's going to happen, you know, but it is because of that. You're always thinking positive and you're always thinking about what's the best way I can shoot this, the most effective, and you're so easy to get along, which is what I love, because sometimes directors have egos and you certainly do not have one. Is there something that you would say to your younger self today? If you had to like give some advice to the younger David Winnie, who was, you know, putting up $50,000 or borrowing $50,000 to make his first movie, what would you say to him?
Probably relax. Eventually it's going to happen. I mean, I used to, the reason I was able to make my first film was because I was naive and, you know, thank goodness over the decades I've grown up and become less naive. I don't think I have, actually. I still get really charged up and excited every time I open the script and think somebody's going to pay me to make this movie. And, you know, you bury yourself in it and you find ways to make things work and make things fun. So I'm not sure what advice I would give myself. Maybe just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I've sort of navigated the career that I had, but I'm pretty sure I did it probably the best way for me and things worked out. And, you know, thank goodness there's been slow years. I mean, not kidding ourselves. There's been years where the phone doesn't ring, but generally I've had very, very incredible luck. I mean, I like to think I'm good at what I do, but I mean, you also really need to just have the stars align and you need to end up, you know, the luck of working with the right people and, you know, hopefully magic happens.
Magic always happens if you believe, as they say in the Disney movies.
I want to tell you, viewers and listeners, Alexia and her wonderful mom were part of a group of, I call them guardian angels when I arrived in Los Angeles 20, 25 years ago. And the two of them and Richard Arlick at Gersh and Todd Berger at William Morris, those people I always have, this is why I wanted to talk to you today, is those people really supported me more than they realized when I got to LA and I had no clue about how to get into the business. And just knowing that there were some friendly folks out there just meant a lot to me. And so that I really appreciate that. So I'm thanking you publicly for that. Thank you for buoying me up those years when I first got to LA and I had no clue what I was doing.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Well, you know, you had plenty of clues. I remember when you had a little get together in at the AFM at the Viceroy where, yeah, I was going to tell you like there is no power in your computers anymore, but had a beautiful little luncheon at the Viceroy and we took pictures and everything.
I remember we often used to meet at the Peninsula. I don't know if you
always check each other out at the, I'm like, I'm at the AFM, come and see me. For everybody who doesn't know what the AFM is, it's the American Film Market, and it's a big film convention that happens every year. And I have a feeling this year will be bigger than ever because there's been nothing happening. As you know, all is virtual and people are itching to have in person and hug and kiss and all of that. And they're not going to be doing a lot of it in Cannes, I feel, because of obviously the war and everything that is happening. But I'm hoping that things will get better. Any business etiquette tips that you would want to tell to those young filmmakers out there from a business perspective that sort of kept you going?
I think it's really important. And I don't say this as, you know, in kind of fake words. It's very important. And I'm Canadian, so it helps. It's very important to treat people really well because you never know who's going to help you in your career. And I certainly didn't treat people nicely when I was growing up just because I thought they could help me someday. It's just kind of it's the way we grow up. I think it's the air in Canada. I don't know if it's maybe just the water, but you know, you got to treat people with respect, and especially nowadays, because respect is getting kind of thin in a lot of areas in the world and entertainment and world politics. And I mean, it seems like civility is just evaporating. And so I plug politeness and civility more than ever nowadays because I just think it's needed. And so if I was giving people advice, I would just say, watch your manners, treat people nicely. You know, you can't enter. I never got into the film business thinking, oh, I'm some great, you know, I'm a visionary, I'm the next Hitchcock or something. I mean, well, maybe I did when I was a kid, but I never told anybody that. But you know, you gotta have some humility in this business. And you gotta have, I mean, I guess that's why I've had longevity. If I've had that, I just don't, you got to take care of people that you're working with, you know? And so it's kind of been my mantra.
Oh, that is so true, David. And I have to say, and you just did that like literally 3 minutes ago. I always believe you want to make somebody feel seen, you know, I see you, you know, and just the fact that you remembered that we extended kindness to you and we were there for you that is how you get the right business etiquette. It's not about knowing how to like go and be anxious and pitch and be like pushy and everything. Just let the other person know that you see them and you value them as human being, because it all starts from that. You said that also about the set. You value the humans that are in the set with you, whether they're famous actors or it's the guy bringing you coffee. You have especially to treat them with respect.
I used to be the guy bringing the coffee, so that's why I'm especially nice to that guy. But yeah, yeah, I mean, I think it's important. There's a myth about directors that were screamers and yellers, and you know me, and I've been doing this a long time, and I think I've raised my voice on set maybe once in 30 plus years. It's just a myth that you have to yell and scream at people to get any kind of motivation. It just doesn't work. I mean, everybody has a different management style, but some people manage out of fear, you know, and there's certainly the people that I worked for when I was younger, who shall remain nameless, were a little hot-headed at times. And I think that probably taught me some great lessons about people skills.
Yeah, people skills. Just pay attention to body language, acknowledge people in the room. Yeah, as I'm staying with my things crossed, acknowledge people in the room. Yes, I'm going to do the namaste sign. And just look at people like David. I mean, you're hearing all the stories. It's so hard to direct a movie. Well, David is a testament that he can do probably cumulatively, I think over 150, if not 200, no, probably 200 plus movies he's done between series and TV shows and everything. And he's still here and he's still passionate and he's still looking for the next thing that he's going to be directing. And hopefully it will be one of ours. I'm praying that that's going to be, if not, it's going to have to be. It's going to have to be, you know?
I think the day you don't feel like a little kid on a movie set is the day I want to quit, honestly. I mean, it sounds corny, but you have to have passion for this, because it's a really hard business. And, you know, some of these movies and projects, as you know, take years to finish. And if you aren't excited at the beginning, you're not going to be excited at the ending. And you just won't have the energy to keep things levitated and up in the air and happening.
Wow, this is the perfect ending to this incredible podcast. I mean, he just finished it off with a high note. I absolutely love that. Passion, grit, kindness, humility, paying attention to others, having a happy set. Never say no. Always be a yes person, but not because you're a pushover. You're saying yes because you believe in potential and what is possible. And I absolutely love your life philosophy, because it's so much like mine, and kindred spirits, they always find one another. So thank you, David, for coming on my show. I look forward to checking out your next movies. And for anybody who wants to check you out beyond your official website, which I guess is davidwinning.com. Yes?
Davidwinning.com, the most original title I could come up with for my website. Yeah, that's me.
There you
please
go.
Please check it out. I spent most of my COVID time trying to refresh my website because it was quite old. This is part of it, running on the screen here. I'm doing advertising. That's my website. So yeah, lots of video clips and stories and press stuff. And I did it because I wanted to inspire people to do what I did and make movies if they want to. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. And also I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter at Directed by DW, and I'm everywhere on the net. I'm easy to find if you're looking for me, which is maybe not a good thing. No, it's a good thing.
It is a good thing, but are you a? I have a question. Are you a TikToker or an Instagrammer? Because
no, Instagram and TikTok, I haven't kind of figured out yet. I think I'm an Instagrammer, but I have like 6 photos, which is kind of crazy because I've been there, you know, years, and I never really figured out how to do it. So those are two areas I'm going to have to try to expand a little bit in my social network.
Well, I'll be more than happy to give you my social media like hacks and tips, because I have to say, you are the one, believe it or not, I just remember, you're the one who invited me on Facebook. Like literally, I joined Facebook because of you. You were so ahead of the game. So now it's my turn to pay it forward and give you my TikTok and Instagram hacks.
Well, I've had the davidwinning.com website for 23 years, 1999. I think I was one of the first people to head it out, and it was just so antiquated and old, and we've refurbished it all, and it's great. I'm really proud of it.
Oh, it's a great site, I have to say. But like I said, Facebook now, they say it's for old people, which I guess I'm supposed to say for us.
I know.
The young, we're not old. We're not old. We're young at heart, but you know, I guess old by the young generation, we're probably old, but I don't feel old. But I would say definitely do more Instagram lives. We want to see what it's like to be behind the scenes with you as you're directing. It would be amazing for you to do those stories and kind of show us how you work. So many people are going to get inspired. Hint, hint, hint. So there you have it. But thank you for coming on my show. To all the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, this episode specifically, please subscribe if you haven't, rate and review, because I make no money on this and I love getting good reviews and knowing that I was able to bring you people with knowledge and expertise and passion to get you inspired. So hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. If you want to see more of David, you can just DM me and say, bring him back, and I will. And I'm sure he'll say yes. There you go.
I always say yes. I say yes to everything.
There you go. See, he says yes to everything. So over and out. Happy Friday, everybody. It's the end and we are out. Thank you, David.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Heart of Show Business. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. You can also subscribe, rate, and review the show on your favorite podcast player. If you have any questions or comments or feedback for us, you can reach me directly at theheartofshowbusiness.com.